Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks to Toby for the update. Yeah, that's some mega Caps news.
How about big that? Time.
Hockey news in D.C. the last 2 days. We're going to get into that in greater detail in just a bit. Alex Tuck, of course, will forever be known by Caps fans as the guy who was delivering the shot on net for the save.
You know, the dude who thought he scored but didn't.
Brayden Holtby had other ideas in the 2018 Stanley Cup Final against the Vegas Golden Knights. The last 5 seasons he spent in Buffalo with the Sabres, and a gentleman who knows a thing or two about the Sabres is Jason Sinaraju, who's been working in sports for many years, many sports, including in Buffalo, yeah. And is now the president of the Nats business operation, and he joins us in studio. It's funny, you can talk all sports, because when you sat down and I yeah. said, hey, I'm not going to be that fun right now. I'm sending a bunch of texts to try to figure out what's going on with the Caps. But yet that's one of your old stomping grounds, and you're familiar with Buffalo's operation.
Yeah, I was there in Buffalo. I was running the Bills side, and we worked a lot with the Sabres. And when they acquired Alex Tuck for Eichel, I think that was 2021 or 22. I can't remember which year it was, but I was there. Yeah, and I remember Alex Tuck because I went to Boston College. He did too, so there's a little bit of a connection there. But yeah, you guys are getting a great winger. He's a great guy and good in the locker room.
It's been fun to be over at Nats Park this year. I know you came down half street. Yeah. We wanted to talk to you about some of the things you've got going on. But also, we had you on at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And we put it on the calendar that we wanted to have you back out sometime this month. And this
roughly
is
the halfway point today,
yeah,
right?
To do yeah. it. Exactly. So just a state of the union. You took over right before the start of the year. There were a lot of things you wanted to fix, to amend, to improve. What have you been able to get done so far? And where are we in your process of just kind of improving the state of the union at the ballpark and helping fans to enjoy themselves?
Well, there's been a lot of progress. I think we have a long way to go. But look, we're on the field, 2 games over .500. There's a lot of excitement. We had 29,000 yesterday. Unfortunately, the result wasn't what we wanted, but a lot of fans were excited with their basketball jersey, which was a nice thing to do, especially when the Wizards were picking first yesterday. But we've had some great crowds. We've had some great entertainment options. We had the hot dog day. We've honored a lot of our military like we always do. And it's been exciting. It's been a good season. Our season plan holders have been reacting really well to some of the adjustments we've made for them. But there's always room for improvement. So we're getting better every day.
So refresh, folks. What were the, I don't have the right terminology. You're a business person, so you do. But
yeah.
Pain points, complaint points, whatever they were. Here's the punch list preseason. And then kind of compare it to right now. Like when you say progress, what is that progress? And what were some of those pain points?
Yeah, so I came in mid-January, and one of the things I read and heard about from fans was getting into the ballpark was a challenge. And again, when you have 40,000 people, any ballpark is going to be a challenge.
Sure.
But what we wanted to do for our season plan holder, so your season ticket holder, the people that are coming on a regular basis, was give them a dedicated entrance. So we've done that in left field. By all accounts, that's been successful. We have some blips every so often, but for the most part, I walk over there a lot. Our season plan holders are really excited to have their own entry. We've expanded our go-ahead entry, which is facial authentication and just walking right through. I think we're at about 8-9% of our fan base is using that now, which is up from last year. So our fans are excited about that. The other thing we wanted to launch, and you might remember this very vividly, is lower-priced options for beer. And so we've had 8.99 16-ounce beers available in all of our ballpark. We've had some adjustments with our partner Levy, but by all accounts, our fans are really enjoying that. And again, just giving more affordable options, getting people in the ballpark has been our focus a lot.
I don't think you knew when you were coming here that the team was going to be over 500 right now. I don't know if the baseball operation expected that. That's got to obviously be some wind at your sales, so to speak, to help in this process. You want to keep seeing more people come out. There are also superstar players right now. I mean, James Wood looks like one of the best players in the sport. CJ Abrams as well. How do you guys go about marketing those guys and making sure that not only right now, we're getting out the vote, things like that, but people are coming out to see those players as well. Because I know I heard you on the radio with Charlie and Dave recently, and you made a really good point about wanting to be like a destination for young single people in D.C. to just come hang out at the ballpark, those types of things. And that makes great sense. That if you're not catering to those people, you're probably not going to win in this city. But also, we got one of the five or seven best players in baseball, maybe, in James Wood, and making that a priority as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, CJ's, I think, third in RBIs.
He's been amazing.
James has been having an amazing year. I'm excited to see CJ leading all NL shortstops in All-Star voting. We want to get James into that top six, top five, top four, hopefully get voted into the game as well. So, you know, shout out for him. But yeah, that's been helpful. The way we've been marketing them is we're putting content out around those two. Again, we don't want to focus just on those two because there's a lot of good things, right, happening. I mean, Nunez is with 30 plus steals, our pitching staff, you know, Foster Griffin's been amazing. So there's a lot of great things going on. But look, with CJ and when James Wood are playing really well, they're recognizable superstars now in the game or getting there toward that point. Our fans are starting to recognize our Abrams jersey sales have increased. Our Wood sales have always been strong. So it's been really nice to see more of those jerseys around. And I think the fan base is now effectively almost appreciating or learning about them again, as they've had a lot of success. And it's been awesome to see. And they're great human beings and they're great guys. So it's an easy story to tell.
How much for you since, I mean, again, when we talked to you just like days after you came on board in January, I think. So now that you're a veteran of this position in about 6 months or so, what have you kind of felt in terms of how much is putting out fires? How much is, you know, planning? How much is like in terms of your time and energy and where you're allocated?
I think this job has a lot of interesting moments that happen during the course of the year. You know, things happen on a regular basis in the world, in our world, social media, etc. I wouldn't say it's necessarily putting out fires as much as it is listening to our staff, you know, getting to know our staff. We have some great staff at the Nationals, right? And getting to know them, making sure that, you know, I'm serving them as well too, right? That's an important constituent in my world on the business side. Then listening to our fans, right? And getting to know them. So we've been doing focus groups. I think I'm doing my ninth one tonight, where we've had our season plan holders and our single game buyers come and talk to me. And we have a set series of questions we ask them about what they want to see that we can improve. And so, you know, just trying to be out there and be present, I think, is the number one thing I've been trying to do.
Well, I will say to your credit, I have seen you in no fewer than 15 different places in the ballpark. Seriously, like whether it's like there was like a I don't want to say a leak, but like a little tiny bit of water, and like you were dabbing it with a paper towel. You gave instructions on to where someone should go when they were in the elevator. Seriously, oh, wow. Like to what section?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen you everywhere and anywhere. Just, you know, as they say, pressing the flesh and kissing babies, presidential candidate style. So good on you, man.
Again, I think it's important for me to learn and observe everything I can. So I try to walk out there and lead by example. And, you know, hopefully, our fans can see that.
Jason Sinaraja running the Nats business side of things in studio with us for a little mid-season update. He told us he would come over and catch up with us after several months. He was kind enough to make some time on his schedule to do that here on Grant and Danny on the Fan. I am Team Tarps Off Crew.
Yeah.
I find that to be awesome and a blast. It started in St. Louis. It was a very natural thing. It is spread around baseball. Your thoughts on just the growing trend in the sport, and frankly, in D.C., where it's becoming a game-by-game nightly occurrence, and at times, a couple sections up in the outfield are being taken over by the youngsters ripping off their shirts.
Well, actually, one of the days I went up there,
did you really?
Very close. I didn't go. I was very tempted to go and do it myself. But I think I was.
Did your tarp stay on?
I was advised not to do that, and it was probably the right decision. But I love that, like that energy. I actually wanted to go see like what types of fans are going up there. And it was really striking to me, guys. Like a young family went up there. It was a mom, the daughter, two sons, and the dad. And they clearly were like inching over there. And it was really interesting. The mom was taking video, and the two boys and the dad took off their shirts. And it was really cool because like it's an engagement, right? At the end of the day, we are an entertainment option. We obviously want to win and all that kind of stuff, but people want to be entertained, have a good time when they come up to the ballpark. So to see the joy, see the excitement, I love it. It's also added a lot of juice in the ballpark. Like there's some really hot Saturdays where I can understand why they're taking their shirts off. And it's added a lot of energy to our fans and also to our players.
Totally. This has been my, I don't want to say argument, because I'm not sure that there is one, but we've talked about it a lot with different media members in the press box or whatever, and you never know what they're going to yell, what they're going to chant. If yeah. Sometimes there's cursing, whatever.
Yeah.
And my point is, the juice is way worth the squeeze here, assuming they're not saying anything terrible and awful, because I have been in this ballpark for years where I had my own bathroom and my own concession stand and most of my own section, and it's been dead. It's quiet. There are way too many nights over the last several years where you just feel like you're watching a game in a library. And if anything else, it's a lesson to everyone that you can be heard. Like, when there's a few hundred kids up there, or people, whoever's up there, screaming, it is so loud. You can hear it on the broadcast. You can hear it in the press box. And it just, it's almost like we're watching the World Cup in studio. It's this soccer feel of like, and it just brings something to the environment. The same way the drums on Half Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really like it.
I think you said it really well. I think, again, we're in the entertainment business too. And to have that entertainment, to bring an energy when you have 81 games, you know, when you have 81 games, it's something that really, you know, you need that every so often. And it's been great. I really love it. I love the fact that they're moving around now, if you've noticed. Like, they were in right field and now they've moved around.
Yeah, I wondered if they were like told to, like, someone sitting here tonight.
Yeah, like, who's in charge?
There are some things that we try to, you know, help with or whatever. This one is totally organic. Like, okay. I actually noticed it yesterday. They were in right field one game, and then two games ago they were in right field. Yesterday they were in the upper deck, kind of behind first base. I thought that's really cool. And that section, for some reason, looked a lot bigger. I don't know. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen him in left. I've seen him doing pretty much everywhere at a different point. What is kind of your next mountain that you want to climb? Sort of the next big thing where you go, okay, I feel settled, not settled and satisfied, because you're always looking to improve, but we've accomplished so much here to this point halfway through the season. What's kind of the next big thing you want to, the challenge you want to take on?
Well, you know, look, I mean, the ballpark is almost 20 years old, mm-hmm. right? We get a lot of feedback about the ballpark experience, good and bad. There's some things that we can fix right now. Our concessions, we're continually looking at getting people in and out of the ballpark. Obviously, cleanliness, you mentioned I was dabbing something. Like, I really take that seriously. We want it to be a very clean environment. But longer term, we've got to figure out what appeals to different parts of the fan base. You know, the VVIP to the outfield social seeking fan, to the value consumer, to the families, to the group outings, etc. And so we're going through what we're going to look at the ballpark. Right now, I can't announce anything, but we've had some really good conversations with the city, really appreciative of them and everybody involved with Events DC and so forth, around what we can do to refresh this place.
And that's what I was going to ask, because some of that's out of your hands, right? Some of that, not, you know, you've obviously got a lot of power and you wield it, but the city has to be involved on some of the maintenance stuff and some of the big picture things, right?
Again, I wouldn't phrase it as power as much as we're partners with them.
Uh-huh.
This is a civic asset, the team, the ballpark, et cetera. We want to enhance it so that future generations of our community can have a great experience too for what they're going to want. And we're working actively with local officials to make that happen.
So in the short term coming up, my favorite game of the year is always the 4th of July game.
Yeah.
It's a morning game, so that's going to be massive, obviously. There's a Yankee series around the horizon as well. What kind of things can you tell us about what you have coming up?
Well, first off, you know, tonight's Pride night, then tomorrow night is soccer night. So we're going to have a soccer jersey with the Nationals logo on it, which is really cool. And if you wear the jersey around after the game to select Navy Yard bars, the U.S. is playing at 10 p.m. You can drink $1.50 Budweiser's, courtesy of Budweiser's celebration of
their
birthday. So that's pretty cool for any fans coming out. So, I mean, again, free beer for those who want to partake in that, and lower price beer, you know, that's what we do. But on the 4th of July, there will be free beer courtesy of Budweiser. So keeping to that theme. But we have a huge homestand from July 3rd to July 12th. And, you know, we start off with the Pirates July 3rd to the 5th. We have fireworks on July 3rd. We have the 4th of July game. It's even more special this year with the celebration of America 250. So we're going to be doing some very, very cool activations. As I said, I think on the radio or TV the other night, it's going to be astronomical to give you an understanding of what's going to happen there. June 5th is a patriotic T-shirt giveaway. Then we have a big series against the Astros, which I know for our fans is a little bit of a rivalry there for going back. And then we have the Yankees July 10th to the 12th. And On July 10th, we have Marvel Night with Captain America, a bobblehead giveaway. But look, it's the Yankees. There's going to be a lot of energy in the crowd. Unfortunately, there's probably going to be a lot of Yankee fans there. So I'd ask our fans to show up, wear red on Sundays, wear the Navy on Fridays, wear the City Connect on Saturdays, and really, you know, pump up our team that weekend.
The team is playing so well.
Yeah.
We're at the All-Star break after that series, you know, right there in the middle of July. Summer, kids are out of school. Like, it's time. Let's get the ballpark
rocking.
As I said,
game 81 is tonight. It's wild. We are tonight is the exact halfway point, the midpoint of the season. And then you said the All-Star break's a little bit later, trade deadline coming up, but business is happening right now. It's so much fun. At the end of the day, you said it's an entertainment product. This is such a fun team to follow, care about, and be interested in, because you're kind of looking up going, I don't know if they're supposed to be here, but they are. This is great.
Well, look, credit to Paul Toboni and our baseball ops guys. I mean, they've created a very exciting team, and obviously any baseball decisions are their purview. But look, from my perspective, it's a very entertaining team.
Yeah.
We score a lot of runs, so we're never out of it. And, you know, it seems like James Wood hits a home run every first inning. I feel like at times, I know that's not true, but so I just, you know, tell our fans, you know, get into the ballpark early, because you may miss a home run and we're up already. So it's really exciting. You know, you mentioned that school's out. You know, obviously Kids Eat Free is back this summer. It's a great deal.
And it's very popular in the Paulson house. We've got four kids and we get the four brown bags.
Uh-huh.
It's a hot dog. It's a bottle of water and chips. And I will tell you that we have utilized of that very nice perk every single time we've gone to the ballpark the last couple of years.
I'm glad. Yeah, I mean, look, it's fun on Sundays. It's a different energy.
Yeah.
Friday and Saturdays are like a little bit more like an event, social seeking, you know, that kind of atmosphere. The music's a little louder. Sundays, it's that family orientation that we're trying to go for, right? And, you know, kids can run the bases afterwards. There's story time, etc. We've got post-game concerts. So we have Jason Derulo on July 24th. Jordan Davis on August 7th. We've got some really, really exciting promotions. Hawaiian Shirt and Shorts Day are set on August 8th. We have a Harry Potter Day on July 25th. So there's a lot of stuff to come out to the ballpark on, a lot of excitement. Come out and cheer the team on. You know, I know the guys really appreciate it.
Well, we will be over there, and we will be seeing you, and hopefully they keep on winning, because then... Yeah.
So fun, man.
The house is going to be packed. Jason, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, buddy.
Jason Sinaraja of the Nationals in studio with us on Grant and Danny. Started the segment, we told you the Caps, for the second time in 2 days, just made a massive trade. They have added a second 30-plus goal scorer. Back-to-back 30-goal seasons for Alex Tuch the last 2 years. We'll break that down next on G&D here on The Fan.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
Going to talk to Will Dawkins, Wizards GM, shortly. Think about where they were a couple seasons ago. Wes Unseld Jr. was the head coach. Brian Keefe took over in the 2023-2024 season.
Mm-hmm.
Winger comes aboard. Will Dawkins is aboard. But they totally have transformed this team. A lot of good young talent. Of course, the last couple of drafts led to this. And they draft A.J. DeBonson, number one, and joining us right now is the GM of the Wizards, our pal Will Dawkins. Good morning, Will.
How are you, buddy?
Man,
congratulations.
The there he is.
You did it.
Good morning.
You did
good
it.
Good morning. Good morning. How are we doing?
How late was your night?
It was pretty late, but when you get the number one pick, you don't mind staying up late for those nights.
Yeah. I know you mentioned that you kind of couldn't sleep the night before, and you went through your notes one last time, et cetera. Did you, even though you only got a few hours, did you sleep a little better when it was all said and done?
slept pretty well last night. I can't complain. I can't complain at all.
Will, we were lucky enough to be joined by your guy, Michael Winger, last night. He sat down with us at around, I want to say it was like 7:10, maybe 7:15, like less than an hour before the pick was made. He looked remarkably calm, composed.
Just had a smile.
At peace. Like he was feeling good last night heading into that draft. I'm guessing you were kind of sharing the same mindset.
Yeah, he told me he ran into you guys and was able to hop in. Yeah. We've never had one before here or when I've been in my other situation. And it is kind of calming when you don't have anyone in front of you and you don't have to kind of strategize or game plan and be reflective of who you might get. We kind of just settled on the decision, made peace with it, and feel really good about it.
Yeah, so many questions about that. I had said I wouldn't want this pick just because, you know, did you ever feel any pressure? Like, okay, it's a talent-rich draft. You had 10 teams tanking for all these kids. So many great kids. Like, it's understood. Great players and great kids. So in some sense, you can't go wrong when you're at one, but you kind of can because ultimately when it's all said and done, Will, there's going to be somebody from this draft that's probably going to be considered the best. And there'll probably be a guy that's right next to him, but there's probably going to be one guy that's the best. Did that ever weigh you down that we got to nail this and get the best one?
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. I would say there's definitely a pressure, but it was a good pressure. It's more of a something that you want when you take a job like this. You want to be in these situations to have the opportunity to choose the player who you think is best for your organization. And a draft like this that you talked about where they're full of high-character young men who are elite-level talents, like there's a lot of players that would go one in a lot of drafts. But with us, we valued that, and we wanted that good pressure, and I think we were able to work it through to find AJ. And there's no doubt that he matches up with those other guys that have gone at the top of the draft. He has that number one-level talent, and we were just fortunate that there's multiple options in this year's draft, but I think we found the best one for us.
Well, I'm sure you're not going to tell us when you landed on DeBonsa as the pick, but when you do, whenever that is, how do you keep a lid on it with you and your staff as far as, like, you guys are remarkably proficient at keeping that under wraps? Nobody knew who the pick was.
I was stunned.
You weren't tipping your hand, which I think is great. I think it's awesome to have it under wraps until the last minute.
You want
to keep everybody guessing.
I'd rather know.
I'd rather be in suspense. It's like watching a suspenseful movie.
No.
Like, how do you keep it under wraps like that for so long, however long until you landed on DeBonsa as the pick?
Yeah, I think the way we try to go about our business is just in a professional manner and make sure that the people who are in the know can understand how valuable information is, and we trust our staff, and it was obviously a big decision, but with that, you still have work to do and different things that can come your way, so tilting your hand one way or the other probably isn't the most strategic thing for us, and we just want to make sure we have as many advantages going into the night as possible, so you got to trust the people you're around and make sure that everybody's in the boat, and I think that's what you saw from our organization yesterday. Mm.
So everybody knows, and you guys had the great story and the great video of you guys playing ball while the draft is going on. You know, you've been through this before. It never seemed to work. We'll just play ball and try not to think about it, right? We get that?
Yeah.
Saw it. Great moment.
That was a pretty good summary right there, yeah.
Yep. Great moment. But then when you finally get the word and you go, oh, it's one, you guys are high-fiving, you're chest-bumping the whole nine. We all saw it. Can you at least say this? Because we know that you've been scouting these guys and you've seen them since they're 13, 14, 15, 16 years old. We get it. In the back of your mind, did you know, like, did you at least think, man, we might get AJ? Like, was he the leader in your brain before you had done the deep dive? In your brain, were you thinking, I think we just got AJ DeBonsa? Were you thinking that?
In my brain, yeah, I was thinking we just got AJ. I think I was thinking we have opportunity to take these other guys, and I hope that they are who we think they are.
Right.
And I can't wait to get to know them and meet them and, like, really dive deep. But he's someone that's been at the top of his class for a really long time, and we've been watching for over 3-4 years now. So we know how talented he really is. We had a bunch of information and data points on him, and you're just hoping that what you've heard about him and who he is actually true, and we got that opportunity to go to BYU, spend some time with the staff, talk to some of his teammates, coaches, everyone all the way down.
And it matched up.
And it matched up. So that was a good thing, and then you get to spend some time with him and his representation and family here in D.C., and you feel even better about that situation. I think a few days after that is when you ask about timing, you feel really good about it.
So you threw me when you described Darren Peterson as Pierce, and I know Darren Peterson is great. And I think he's gonna be a great player too. But when we asked you the one word thing, and we were trying to trick you up a little bit, and you said, "Oh, consistent score, high riser," and I'm like, "Yeah, blah 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 blah."
That was for
AJ.
Then
when you said, Peterson fierce. And my brain went to a pretzel, and I was like, "Well, they're going Pierce."
Were you trying to throw us?
What's a better adjective than Pierce? Than fierce?
Fierce.
Forgive me.
I remember that very well that day, the day after the yeah. draft lottery. I got to know him, and I got to know all of these kids throughout the process. I think that adjective sticks. Yeah. I think you're going to have a really, really long career. He's an impressive, mature young man, and I wish him nothing but the best.
We're joined by Will Dawkins, Washington Wizards general manager, on the Rude Guest Hotline. Will, did you ever come close to dealing the pick? Were you tempted by any offers? Did you get offers like up until draft?
I was going to ask you that.
On draft night, did you come close to dealing the pick, or were you just like, you know what, this is too valuable? We love AJ.
We can't give up on AJ. Yeah.
We have to draft him here.
Yeah, I think your phone's busy, like Michael and I talked about right after. Like, we understand that it's a business and people are going to call and make decisions, and teams definitely did. We know how valuable the number one pick is, so we want to make sure we do our due diligence, but we also know how special and how different AJ DeBonta was, and it really didn't get close. We knew we wanted to keep that pick for our fans, for our city, for the organization, for what he can do when you add him to the group that we have. So it was going to take something extremely rare and extremely special to make us punt on an extremely rare and special talent in AJ.
Did Ted have any sort of weight in terms of selecting a player? Like, how is Ted involved in this, if at all?
Ted and Zach, they're awesome. They support us throughout everything. They want to know, and we want to give them some information, but they definitely met up and were able to be at the workout and spend some time watching, but they just wanted to be around to get to know him and see him and be able to answer any questions. But this decision was all Michael, myself, and our staff. They're not weighing input on that too much, if at all.
I kind of want to go big picture with you here, Will. So you've been here for 3 years, right? And when you got here, the team had Bradley Beal. It had Kristaps Porzingis. It had Kyle Kuzma. You're able to draft Bilal Coulibaly in that first draft. The team starts changing a little bit. You trade Denny Avdija, who's become an all-star along the way. You draft Sar that year, Bub, Keyshawn. Then this last year, you make some moves. You trade for Trae Young. You trade for Anthony Davis. And now you draft AJ DeBonta. I'm wondering, along the way in 3 years, what was the toughest decision you made? Was it tough to trade Bradley Beal? What was the toughest thing you've done in the 3 years to get to this point?
The 3 years has kind of flown by. It's wild when you say that, but we have been able to alter the organization, I think, in a good way. For me, it's probably not one specific decision, but if I had to say that, it's sitting down and informing the people that need to know that we're going to go through this deconstruction phase and everything that goes about it and how aligned you have to be in going through it and how strategic you have to be and look more big picture, knowing that it's going to be a rocky way and probably not the best level of basketball for your fans to get behind. So I think making that decision was something that was hard and difficult, and sticking with it is always challenging, but at the end of the day, like we said, we thought it was the right decision for where we wanted to go, because the ultimate goal was to get a bunch of young players that the fans and the city can get behind, that can play the right way and have some continuity and build towards something that's sustainable and sustain success, the goal for us. So I think a lot of tough decisions, but making sure that we stayed on course and we're going to continue to stay the course would probably be the one that pops up more often than not.
And Will, we've been talking about it this morning, taking calls from fans, and we've been talking about it the last few weeks, assuming you were going to get AJ or Peterson. But there are now expectations for this team. Who knows what's going to happen with Davis? I know you're not going to tell us. But you inked Trey. He's inked for a lot of money for the next few years. You've got some really good young players. There are expectations of this team, and we got to get these 17-win seasons out of our mind. And fans and media are now expecting some really good things going forward. I'm not going to go into how many games you guys are going to win or what you think, but you realize there are now expectations for this roster big time. How do you in the front office kind of feel about that?
Yeah, I think we're excited. You want to have expectations on your team. We have expectations internally that we put on ourselves to get better and improve. And it was kind of a conversation that we all had before we even left for the off-season break, is that we want to be more competitive this year. And we wanted there to be expectations in our gym that our players will be fighting and be more competitive for their own personal minutes, and make sure you're in the gym and getting better, so that when we try to take that step next year to be more competitive, it's going to be a dogfight and it's going to be earned. So for us, we're all competitive. It's a very challenging and difficult sport, and it's hard to win basketball games. But at the end of the day, like we talked about, the pressure of making that number one pick, we want the pressure of being competitive every single night. And we think we'll be better at that this year. And for us, that's kind of the goal.
So we talked to John Wall last night, and he talked about what he anticipates the style of play and maybe what needs to change for some of the guys, specifically Trae Young. So Trae Young throughout his career is, you know, 25-10 guy, but a very ball dominant guy. AJ DeBonta seems to be a guy who needs the ball in his hands. He's not a Richard Hamilton come off picks type of player, right? Will you have Trae modify his play a little bit and maybe not take as many shots and ball handle as much?
Yeah, we want to have as many decision makers on the basketball court as possible. I think that's how it makes you dangerous. There's got to be a level of buy-in from everyone to allow each person to make those decisions. But when you look at our team and you look at how we drafted and the players we acquired, they all, for the most part, think the game at a high level, can move the ball, can space, have length, versatility, and know how to play on and off the ball. So I think we'll see a style of basketball that's a little different, but hopefully more dangerous. And I think the guys bought in and want to be a part of that. And I can't wait for everybody to get in the building, spend some time with Coach Keefe and the staff, and kind of create the perfect system that we want to start the season with. But I think everyone to a man knows that it's going to be we over me this year. And we're going to move the ball, share the ball, and do our best to just attack from different angles. And I think it'll look more functional. And at the end of the day, like I said, guys are really motivated, and they're motivated to win, and they're motivated to compete. And I think you'll see that buy-in from our guys this year.
I just want to get back to the AJ kind of the process. When you draft AJ, did it matter that it was kind of like a perfect fit for the personnel you had? Or is AJ such a unique guy, it didn't matter who was on your roster, you couldn't pass up on this ability and character, et cetera?
Yeah, like we always say, we draft people first, and he checked the box on that. The guy has a lot of the values that we value, just in terms of community and family and work ethic, just passion for the game. Like, he's going to continue to get better. So he checked that box. But yeah, he's a rare talent that we were going to take the best player available. When you have an opportunity like that, it just happens to be that the things that we look for on our 94-by-50 chart, mm-hmm. He has a lot of them. And he fits very well with our young players that we've drafted. And that's the group that we're going to continue to bet on to be here and grow and develop at their own pace. But when you talk about size, positional size, versatility, quick decision-making, supreme athlete, he's the best athlete we've tested through the draft the last 3 or 4 times we've done it since we've been here. Ability to make decisions, to live at the rim, be 95th percentile in assists, but also 91st percentile in field goals at the rim.
No, it's pretty
special.
Also
being 100th percentile of living on the rim, getting to the free throw line. So he just fits a lot of boxes. I think he's a big guard. You can play him in a lot of different areas, like you can with Will, like you can with Keyshawn, and like you can with Bilal. It just gives you a lot of, I guess, optionality, which is important for the coach staff. And when you put him in the mix of our guards, we were looking at it yesterday, we'd be tied for the tallest, and then we'd be the longest wingspan among all guards in the league. So, again, we talked about wanting to be defensive and long and versatile, and he just adds to that.
How many guards are you including in that equation?
Score.
How many guards
all
are you including?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, all of them. Because if you just put him in Trae, it wouldn't be the case.
Yeah, including him. No, including our group of guards.
I know, you're saying it's the whole group. It's not just the starters.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, when you put Bilal, Keyshawn, him out there at the same time with Alex, and that's pretty special.
Pretty long group. Yeah, somebody asked him to compare himself to an NBA guy that maybe we haven't heard before, and he brought up Lenny Bias, and I'm kicking myself that I didn't think of that. I think it's actually a great comparison. just in terms of ability, talent, etc. Do you like that comparison?
I don't mind that one at all. Right. I'm glad he was able to pull that out. I don't know who showed him tape on Lenny Bias.
Yeah, that's a story.
That's
good.
Pretty,
I like that.
Pretty darn impressive. Yeah. Yeah. And I think stylistically, and obviously tragic, you know, nobody wants that. But like from a playing perspective, it's actually a pretty great comparison, I think.
Yeah, he was pretty special. We had a dinner the other night, and a bunch of people that are local D.C., but also mixed in with our coaching staff. And we were just talking about just the DMV Mount Rushmore for people who didn't make the Hall of Fame or won't make the Hall of Fame in basketball. Mm-hmm. I think everybody agreed that he was on it. But that was actually a pretty fun conversation. But again, AJ is unique. I think he is himself. We haven't really seen someone that has the length and athleticism here on our roster, and there's a lot of players he's watched growing up, but I think he's going to be one of one and be AJ DeBonsa, and we look forward to that.
Should he become an MVP of the league?
Should he become?
Yes.
I think he's going to strive. I think
he's got that talent.
A lot of work to do, but he's got size, talent, and upside to continue to get there, but that's a really high bar. I know it's on his to-do list. My to-do list is to get him in town and get him ready for summer league.
Yeah, when can that start?
What are the plans for summer league?
Yeah, yeah. What's the rule on that?
Does he have to sign a contract, or can you get him in the gym today?
You can't keep players like that out the gym. He'll probably come in and grab some shots and do some things. But once July rolls around, we'll probably work on the contract and get that set up so that he's pretty good to go for summer league. We obviously have night two of the draft tonight, and hopefully we draft a couple more guys with that pick and bring them in and play summer league. But the guys who've been doing the jump season, and we can't wait to see them play as well. So we'll have a good amount of our rookies from last year playing, mix in some free agents and take a look at them. We'll start practice here on the 2nd, I believe, of July, and then fly out to Vegas on the 8th, and I think our first game will be 9th or 10th. We haven't got that scheduled yet.
Hey, Cake said you could take a vacation this week.
No, I jumped the gun.
You amended it?
You can go on vacation in August, Will. You're good. You still got to stay at work for the time.
There's this little thing called free agency coming up.
I slept
after
on
tonight,
that.
We'll transition into that.
Yeah.
Hey, gotcha. Congratulations, Will. It's just an amazing day for the franchise, for the fans. And, you know, you've been so great to us. We really appreciate it.
We'll
Thank
talk
you.
To you soon, man.
Oh, man, appreciate you guys. Thanks again for covering it last night.
Yep. Of course.
Good
of course.
Will Dawkins,
thank you, buddy.
Wizards GM here on the Junkies.
We are fired up to jump on the Rude Guest Hotline and welcome in Keith Smith from SpotTrack and host of the Front.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Office show. Talk a little NBA. What's up, Keith? How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
What's happening?
Let's start with the big trade that went down yesterday between Minnesota and Charlotte. What do you make of that move for the Hornets to ship Ball out when he's by far their best player?
I don't know that he'd go by far their best player. Okay. I think he's certainly their most popular player, but I think Brandon Miller and Colin Knipple are pushing him for best player. It's funny, there's a very wide divide on LaMelo Ball. He's very popular with fans, especially younger fans, but some of them in the NBA still think he's a little bit too much of a circus sideshow for them, where some of the things he does out there aren't always conducive to winning. That said, that got, you know, tamped down quite a bit last year. Charlotte team that's on the rise, and this is surprising from that standpoint because he's such a big part of what they were a year ago with being one of the better offensive teams we saw in the league and all their improvement. So for them to move on from him, they have to feel like, hey, for what he was making salary-wise, for where we're going with having to pay some other guys and what we want to be as a team, it just doesn't really fit. And they got one heck of a package.
Donovan
Reed is a really good player. They got a bunch of draft capital, so they're in a bunch of salary flexibility. They're in pretty good shape. And then for the Wolves, they're doing everything they can to prove to Anthony Edwards, we'll make big moves to try to win around you. And they needed a point guard, and they went out and got one. It's going to be fascinating to watch how they come together.
Is he there to take some of the pressure off of Ant? Because Ant seems to want to have the ball down the stretch. I don't think he's as good a ball handler as some of those point guards out there. Can that be a help for him?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I think at the end of games, it's always going to be in his hands because he's Anthony Edwards and the best player. You know, I don't really care what team it is. The best player is going to have the ball at the end of the games if they can create their own look. But where LaMelo Ball will help is hopefully by the time you get there, Anthony Edwards hasn't had to do that 50 other times throughout the course of the game. So LaMelo Ball is really going to, you know, do a lot for getting Anthony Edwards set up. If the Timberwolves can commit to playing more kind of up-tempo and get out and run a little bit, I think he'll do really well there and get Edwards a lot of easy baskets in transition. I was talking with someone yesterday after the trade was reported, and they were like, man, Ant's going to live off LaMelo hit ahead passes because he's so good at that. So definitely going to be somebody who can help with all that creation stuff and just make life easier for Anthony Edwards, for Rudy Gobert, for McDaniels, for Dosunmu. He's a very helpful player in that vein.
The other pending major trade is this Jaylen Brown thing. Like, why are the Celtics in such a hurry to get him out of there?
Well, I think what's happened is we've kind of gone down the road with offering Jaylen Brown multiple times for the Celtics side, and now it is, all right, we've got to do this. If we're ever going to make the trade, we got to make the trade now, because Jaylen Brown, his comments, I think, were, I don't think he intended them to mean what a lot of people took out of him postseason. What he said this past season was his favorite year in the league. I think what he was trying to be was very complimentary to, hey, my teammates and I, we way overachieved, and we were still, you know, a really good team, and no one really expected it. And instead, it got taken to mean, oh, he just wants to play by himself, and, you know, isn't happy there. And I think the Celtics do know he got a taste of being the guy, and he probably does like that to some extent. But when you offered him for Kevin Durant a few years ago in a trade, and it didn't get done, and now you very publicly offered him in a trade for Giannis, even if they can't come out and say it direct, we all know it happened. At some point, the guy's going to be like, hey, do you want me here or not? Because you can tell me all you want is you're trying to trade me for great players, but I'm a great player too. Why not just keep me? All of that said, the Celtics are not going to give him away. They're only going to make a trade if it makes sense. And a trade, people keep pitching these trades of, well, here's a ton of draft picks and young players. That's not really what Boston wants. They're trying to win right now. So it's a pretty tough needle for them to thread to get win now players that are going to really help them in a trade where you move Jaylen Brown, because rebuilding is not what they're looking to do.
Talking with Keith Smith here, host of the Front Office Show and at SpotTrack. You can give him a follow at Keith Smith NBA. All right, I'm going to switch it to DC, because all of a sudden there's a ton of excitement with this Washington Wizards team. They get the deal done with Trae Young. They draft A.J. Tabanza. Anthony Davis, the team is talking like they really want him to be a part of it. Let's start with Trae Young. What did you make of that contract?
I have no issue with the contract being a max contract in the first couple of years, or effectively a max contract. What I don't love is the latter couple years on that, because as this Wizards team gets into a position where they're going to have to pay other guys, and clearly that's going to sort itself out here over the coming years, but Alex Sarr will need a new deal, then eventually George and Carrington, and we'll see what happens with Koulibaly and those guys. You're just going to get very, very expensive, and then that's when having $50-plus million for Trae Young may start to look a little tough to balance the cap sheet. But, you know, he's a really good player. I think he's going to help them be a really an improved team going into next year, the combination of him and Anthony Davis, who I believe they're going to keep. We haven't even seen him in uniform yet, so I don't think they're going to do anything as far as trying to trade him. I think they're looking forward to seeing what those two guys can do with all of that young talent going forward, and they'll see if they can build this thing up and get into a place where they can kind of do what the Pistons did, which was go from one of the worst teams in the league to a playoff team to winning a playoff series and just kind of move through the steps that way. And I think Trae Young's going to help them in a big, big way with that, at least over the next 2-3 seasons.
I agree. And then I saw this, and I'm curious what you think. Isn't there a strong possibility of an expansion draft, like after the 2028 season?
Yeah, so Adam Silver said multiple times ahead of the NBA draft in various settings where he's interviewed, when asked about expansion, that if expansion comes, they're looking at starting that with the 2028-29 season is when those teams would come in. So we've got this season, next season we get through, and then after the 27-28 season, we would have an expansion draft, assuming everything goes the way it always has with that. And there's no guarantee, but that's the assumption. And we'll see. Now, would a guy like Trae Young be interesting to an expansion team at $50+ million? We'll see. But the other thing the Wizards could always do, let's say it goes really sideways, and it's like, man, this is now killing our cap, and it's not working out, and we want to move on. They could pay an expansion team to just pick him. They could be like, hey, here's a couple of draft picks. Like, take them off our hands because we got to rebalance our books. So I think they know they're going to have options with that down the line.
Wow. I think that's pretty interesting in this whole thing. And, you know, at some point, yeah, they're paying him a lot of money, but those expiring contracts become assets too.
Yes.
I like the trade pick. I also like that Washington is very clearly trying to win. Like, they're trying to compete. I think adding DeBonta is a huge part of that. The biggest kind of question mark, I'd say, is Anthony Davis. What do you hear about Davis in Washington and how that will go?
Yeah, everything since the trade has been, he would have preferred to be with a team that's closer to title contention at this stage in his career, but he's perfectly open to giving this, you know, a run with the Wizards in seeing. And I think with once they landed the first number one pick in the draft and then drafted A.J. DeBonta, I think that became even more so of, all right, we've got talent galore here on this team, and now we've got Trae Young. So it's not just me leading a whole bunch of kids. I've got a running mate who's more on my, you know, level career-wise as far as experience goes and desire to win and all those things. And now you get all these young kids that are going to grow up, and they're going to grow up quick. I mean, I think a lot of people, I know you all watched it, but I think a lot of people around the general NBA fandom just kind of quit on the Wizards last year because it's, all right, these guys aren't really trying to win, and Trey's not playing, AD's not playing, who cares? But I think for the people who did that missed out on, Alex Saar improved greatly as the season went along. Keyshawn George, much better player, you know, than he was as a rookie. I think there's a lot of talent within that young group there. And DeBonta, for me, was a no-brainer number one. I thought he should have been the pick. I think he's going to be great in time. It's going to take him, like every other young player, a couple years to get adjusted. But I could not be higher on the future for the Wizards right now.
Love that, man. I love to hear that. Do you think they have to do a deal with Davis? Because I've seen these reports that he wants an extension. Like, when would that even kind of be a topic?
Yeah, that's going to be probably at some point this summer. We'll get a lot more about, like, hey, we want to try to get something done with AD. You know, what is it going to take? You know, well, where do we need to be? And I think that, much like the Trae Young situation, is you got to be careful there because you don't want for a player of his age with his injury history, you just got to be careful how much you lock into, how big of money, how long-term of money, and those kind of things. That'll come up in August because I believe it's around August 6th when he's actually eligible to extend. So if you don't hear anything about that in the next month, I wouldn't stress. That'll come up later. And then if that gets sideways, then that's where things could go a little rough for Anthony Davis, because I think he's going to probably have a conversation of, hey, if you don't really want me here, like, what are we doing? You know, let me get somewhere else who does want me, is willing to pay me, because it's not like passing up on a chance to win the title, because they're not as high as they am on the future. I don't think they're going to be in that position this upcoming season. So that's something to keep an eye on there. But the Wizards traded for him knowing that would be where things would go. And they've definitely, I would assume, have all kinds of backup plans ready to go, you know, depending on how those negotiations play out.
If a opportunity came up to move him, what do you think they can get for a guy like Anthony Davis with that injury history?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. You know, are you willing to take on some money that's maybe a little sketchy the other way. It would depend on what they're prioritizing, like positional fit. But you could be able to get players who can play, but maybe their contracts aren't so great. You could certainly take on draft picks if they wanted to do that. Now, I think we've moved out of that phase of this rebuild. So I think it would be, hey, if we're moving Anthony Davis, we want guys who can actually come in, help us win, and help us play. And they're probably going to have to be more of like a power forward type player, because just looking at this roster, this team has guards and wings for days. So it's going to be, all right, we need a little bit more size to go with Alex Sarr up front if we're going to move Anthony Davis. And you could certainly pull that off. My sense is we'll see if that's where it goes, but it's probably only going to be a conversation if they can't come to an extension and he starts to agitate of, hey, then get me somewhere else.
Yeah, so the timeline for that is August. I'm very curious how that will shake out.
Yeah.
But doesn't AD have 2 years on his deal? Like, is it
58
standard?
58 and 62, I think.
Yeah, is it standard to offer extensions with 2 years left?
Well, next year, he has this upcoming season, and the season after that's a player option. So functionally, he could walk for nothing at the end of this season. He could opt out and walk away to another team. That's why when you get to this point in these contracts, you almost kind of ignore the player option year, because it's, you don't have control of that as the team. So what you're trying to do, if you want them long-term, is we're going to extend. When it's multiple guaranteed years and there's no options attached, yeah, teams get a little bit more of, all right, hold on, unless you're like Nikola Jokic and you're very clearly our franchise guy and we're going to do what it takes to get you extended, then we'll do that. But if it's a situation where, all right, if we don't do an extension, we'll talk about it later. If you're Anthony Davis, you're going to say, well, then I'll opt out and I'll run to whoever has cap space that fits where I want to be and what I want to do as a player. So that's where you have to be careful with that.
It's interesting, because I kind of thought if he was going to get moved, it would be at the draft. But we've now seen, I mean, the Ball trade came after the draft. You know what I mean? Obviously the Giannis thing was the headliner, but
yes.
There wasn't that much action at the draft with trades and stuff, which I found kind of interesting. But I guess
we don't always see the like superstar trades at the draft. It's more of the nice starter level guys that get moved around at the draft and those kind of things. So I'm not overly surprised. I mean, it's funny. So much has already happened, and with contracts being agreed to and trades being agreed to, free agency doesn't even open until the 30th at 6 p.m. So we're still, 4 days away, from free agency even being officially open for negotiations. Now, trades, you can negotiate. Those are a little bit different. But, yeah, we're really in this position where it's like, holy cow, so much has already happened, but I'm not surprised that other things haven't happened yet. Mm.
Who is the biggest free agent now? Because it seems like free agency has changed so dramatically in the NBA that it's all sign-in trades, because these guys can get more money with their current teams, right?
Yeah, can I interest you in Norman Powell?
No.
That's kind of where we're at. Norman Powell, he's a really good player, and he was an all-star last year, but this is a guy who's in his 30s now, and you're not breaking the bank for him. And obviously, it's LeBron James, but that's a whole different kind of world where, at this point in his career, LeBron's going to tell us where he's playing. He's not going to do meetings like he did once upon a time with everybody come pitch me. It's going to be, here's where I'm going, we're going to make it work, and here's how it happens. But you're absolutely right. What's happened in the NBA now is extensions have become so lucrative for players. What they do is they extend, and then when they're not happy, they ask for a trade and say, hey, all right, it didn't work out. Now let's move me along in trades. Trades, it's extensions, then trades are really how business gets done in the NBA. And here's what I always say. It's almost kind of more fun, because when it's a free agent signing, it impacts one player going to one team and maybe impacts the team they left. When it's a trade, it's going to be multiple teams and often multiple players involved. So you get a lot more movement that way.
Keith, man, the great appreciate information. Keith. Thank you for your time.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, bud. Keith Smith from Spot Track and the Front Office Show. Give him a follow at Keith Smith NBA.
Anybody, anywhere.
Yeah.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome in to Take Command. Logan's family vacay continues. Grant Paulson with you. You can check me out on 106.7 The Fan from 2 to 6.30 every single day. Of course, you can watch the pod on 106.7 The Fan and Team 980 YouTube channels. And it's a special Take Command because we have with us today a legend, one of the great Redskins of all time, a Super Bowl champion, an MVP in the National Football League, and a former player of the year and man of the year in the league. Joe Theismann is with us. Joe, so cool to have you on Take Command. Thanks for hopping in.
I appreciate it, Grant. Once again, I'm a backup. You know, I started my career as a backup, and now with Logan on vacation, I guess I'm just a backup again. It's life runs full cycle, though.
Hey, Logan, better help that you're not as good at this as you are after getting your other shot after having been a backup. He might be in trouble, but no, it's great to catch up with you. I always like to tap into both your thoughts on what's going on with the team now and then talk about some of the times when you were playing. So I guess why don't we just start with what a big year this is ahead. It's going to be year three for this regime that proved right away they knew what they were doing, getting to an NFC championship game, Adam Peters, Dan Quinn and company, and Jaden Daniels going into year three. What's your feel about just the overall import of this season as we're now deeper into, you know, this outfit 3 years in?
Everything I hear about this particular football team, it has a great energy level. And I think that's part of it. I think chemistry is so very important to the success of any organization, especially a ball club. Jaden coming back healthy is going to be very, very important. Last year was just a tough year all the way around. You know, go 5-12. We're out of a lot of games early. We just couldn't quite get to where we wanted to go. I think there were pieces that were missing, Terry's holdout, and a lot of other different things that happened to this football team. But now I think we're in a really, really good, solid place. Had, I think, a good draft, signed some really good free agents. I know Jaden's going to come back with a vengeance to prove that last year was just one of those things that happened, and I'm looking for him to have a terrific career going forward. I think it's going to be different. It's going to be challenging. I mean, all you need to do is take a look at the first three games. You know, you go Eagles, Cowboys, Seattle. We're going to find out exactly who we are in a hurry. Not that everybody says, well, you know, it's only one game here. We'll get no. I think for us, it's very important that we get out and set the tone because they're on the road. Two of them are on the road.
Yeah, I want to get into that schedule in a moment. And Jaden, you said something that interests me, though. You talked about the chemistry. It does feel like, you know, they use the word brotherhood in the building a lot. Yeah. It does feel like that's an authentic thing that Dan Quinn has really tried to cultivate. And I'm, you know, from a bigger picture point, I wonder, you were talking, you know, not just football, but organizationally, all types of businesses. Is that more of a GM thing or a coach thing, do you think? The chemistry in terms of player selection, where these guys will fit together and I've got to evaluate that? Or is that up to Dan when everybody gets in the building? Because that seems to be his secret sauce, maybe.
I think it's both. I think, you know, Adam's done, I think, an excellent job finding people that fit the character of this football team. You want character guys. You need guys that, you know, will be there. I remember asking Joe Gibbs, what does he look for in a championship player? He says, character, intelligence, and ability. I said, Joe, everybody wants those three things. He says, no, that's the order in which I look for people to add to this football team. Character first, because we're going to go through some tough times. We need guys to be there. Intelligence. I mean, you take a look at the size of the game plans and you look at the wristbands of the players. I mean, I laugh about that Dan Marino commercial when he has to put his glasses on to look at his wristband. But it's true. The game plans are so expansive. So it's character, intelligence. And then, oh, by the way, how fast are you? How strong are you? What's your 40 time? All those different things come in. And I think Dan's built this football team this way with the help of Adam. The two of them work in lockstep together. And I think that's what you have to have. That's why so many coaches want control of who's on their team. I think in our case, we have a great position with two guys that really understand what one needs and what the other one's looking for. And so I would say it would be very difficult to choose one over the other when it comes to the chemistry of this football team.
Joe Theismann, Grant Paulson, Take Command. On the intelligence part, thinking about the wristband,
How much has the verbiage and the length of play calls and the complexity of even offensive design changed since you played, or were all of those things true when you played to the same extent?
Some places were, like San Francisco, the way Bill Walsh put it in offense. A lot of the terminology is still used today. It's a very expansive offense. Like, for example, our offense was based on numbers. Most of the other West Coast offenses were based on verbiage, numbers, and signs. And so just real simple, I'll give you a play. We'd go trips right, which is a formation they use today. It means you got one receiver to the left, tight end to the right, and two receivers to the right, and one running back in the backfield. So you've got, that's trips right. And you go 989 Y cross sneak. And what you used to do is we number our routes 0 through 9. 0 was a hitch. 1 was a 0, 1 were hitches. 2 was a quick post. 3 was a 10-yard out. 4 was a curl. 5 was a deeper out. 6 was a deeper curl. 7 was a corner. 8 was a post. And 9 was a go. And the way it was designated for us, which made it really, if somebody came into our organization, you could catch on to our plays in one practice. All you needed to do was know where you lined up. And the way we started the call of our plays, 989 Y cross sneak, 9 would be the single receiver side. That's the first digit. The second digit would be the inside receiver. The third digit would be the outside receiver to the two receiver side. And then you tell everybody else what to do. Y cross sneak. So you're telling the tight end to cross. You're telling the back to sneak out. And that's how simple it was. And we use signals to get in. I've not worn a helmet. I've been meaning to do this. I've talked to Dan about having the chance to do it. I'd like to hear what it sounds like when the communications come in from the sidelines now with the headsets the way they are inside the helmets. The other thing, too, that scares me a little bit about the development of young players today is when you have a headset, it only cuts off with 15 seconds to go. So the coach can talk to you up until 15 seconds. Ours was a quick signal, and you basically called the play. And you had time. I had time to turn to Art Monk and say, listen, Art, if we got a 3 route, okay, we got an out. If he sits outside, just plant your foot and go up. I'll throw it up the field. I don't know how players can communicate with other players in the huddle when they're staring down at their wristband and just regurgitating what they heard in their ears. I think it takes away an element of communication inside the huddle that we had before.
Was the play clock 40 seconds then as well?
I think it was. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was.
And how did they signal the play?
I'd wind up with about 25 seconds to do my thing.
Just to do what you want at the line. How did they signal in the plays? Was that actual like hand signals or
body signals like 9, 8, 7, 6, you know, through the
body. It's almost like a baseball coach.
It's exactly what it was. Yeah. Don Bro is our signal guy. And they allowed us to sit and sort of design our own signals too. And Bro was unbelievable. I mean, he'd stand right next to Joe and you see him doing all kinds of things. And I laugh sometimes when I think about, you know, some of the particular descriptive ways that we came up with stuff that he wouldn't do.
How would you combat, or maybe you didn't have to, but if someone was doing that today, you're having cameras trained on you and everybody's seeing it constantly and everyone would know your signals. I'm thinking like Belichick, Spygate, that kind of stuff. Did you change them week to week, or was that really not something you had to worry about?
We added and deleted certain things. You go in with a foundation, say, okay, I'm going to give you 3 early signals, ignore them. Then they take the next ones. Or we'll get the first. I mean, there's always ways to get around. See, if defensive coaches wanted to try and steal signals, all you need to do is throw one curve at them, GP, just one curve. And all of a sudden they're going to say, forget it. We're just going to run our defense. We're not going to try and figure out what they're doing. So all you need to do is throw one little monkey into the wrench there, monkey wrench in, and it's party over.
Because now they guess wrong and they're going, this is hurting us more than it's helping us. We'd rather just not know. That makes a lot of sense. Joe Theismann filling in for Logan Paulson. So back to this group this year, I want to talk about Jaden with you. I'm sure you spent some time. Everybody who knows him personally talks about his humility, the work habits, and what I get to see from farther away, and then even at the facility, his interactions with people. He just seems very much authentic and a worker. The stuff that, like, when you evaluate him from the outside, you're not on the inside of the building, you don't know. You don't get to sit down with him, talk to him, make sure this guy's going to be first in, last out. What have you made of him so far in those ways?
He is exactly what he was when he set foot in that building. He's humble. He's hardworking. He wants to be great. He doesn't want to be good. He doesn't want to be a good quarterback. He wants to be great. And he puts the time in to do that. And he has wonderful interaction. You know, you walk through a locker room and you see the interaction with the other players. You know, that the locker room is a very sacred place, a very unique place where you build relationships. That's why coaches spend so much time figuring out where they're going to put the players. You don't want to put a bunch of rookies together. You want to put them with some veterans. You want somebody who can influence them in a very positive way. And Jaden's one of those guys that just, you know, his smile is just lights up a room. He's unflappable when it comes to being able to be in a big moment. We've seen that. You know, you make a list of the things that you want to see in a quarterback, a championship quarterback, a guy of a high level, and he checks every box as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, physically too, on the field, the accuracy, the touch, some of what he displayed, particularly in his rookie year, because there were a lot of injuries last year. He only had four games he started and finished, and I didn't realize this until we were talking to someone recently. There are only two times where he would, you know, back-to-back weeks get his work in during the week and play in that game. It's really hard to sustain when that's the case.
You can't
do you worry at all about durability with him, or do you think last year was kind of fluky?
I think last year was a bit fluky, to be honest with you. A lot of guys go through things early in their career, and then they sort of find their way, how to protect themselves. That's the biggest thing with him. Because he was asked to run so much, he puts himself in harm's way quite a bit. I don't think it's going to happen as much this year. I think he's going to work under center a little bit more, which will be great for him. It'll be great for our running game. It'll be great for the pass protection. He can get the ball out of his hands with one quick look. He doesn't have to hold on to it. It's going to be hard to have free runners all the time when you're not in the shotgun all the time. I think David Blau's offense is really going to be good for Jaden Daniels. The other thing, too, and remember, he didn't play the last month of the season, but he spent a lot of time with Coach Blau, spent a lot of time on another field working on what they were going to prepare to do this year in some way, shape, or form. I think whether Cliff was here or not, they were preparing him for a different style of offense, which I think will be extremely effective. Patrick Mahomes under center more. We see Jared Goff under center more. See a lot of guys going under center. Caleb Williams under center a bit more. It's the play action is so much easier when you're under center, and then your drops, the protection, all of those things work together. And I think that's going to be a big part of what we're going to do offensively.
And one of the things I had not considered that you just said is the offense actually could lead to fewer rushing attempts from him. Not because they're going to ask him to run on design runs less. That's probably true, too. And that's obvious. But the ball comes out faster.
Absolutely.
And a lot of those scrambles come from things breaking down or him holding the ball. And now something leaks at the line of scrimmage and you kind of run out the other side or whatever. In theory, if things go as planned, this is very much a, you know, pre-snap. Make your decision. We know where the ball is going, and the time to throw should be lessened. So maybe there will be less scrambles, like the non-design runs as well.
But yeah, obviously the protection up front is going to dictate a lot of that. And I think our guys have been pretty good. The one thing I've noticed over the last couple of years is we don't talk about the offensive line, which is great for them because no holding penalties, no offsides. Our guys have been very disciplined. And when you're not talking about an offensive line in a negative way, that's a positive thing for the offense. And like I said, when you run play action, it causes people just to hesitate for a split second. And that's all you really need to get the ball out of your hands. And again, it's not a system he's unfamiliar with. So this is the year that I think things will happen. I've always believed this. The first year, I don't care who you are, you learn how to be a pro. You learn how to take care of your body. You learn how to get your rest. You learn your study habits. And you're learning the offense. The second year, you study what people are trying to do against you, particularly as an individual. not necessarily conceptually as an offense, but you study yourself, you say, okay, what did they try to do to me? The third year, it all should come together. That's why, you know, I'm still a big proponent of guys sitting and watching for a little while. I wouldn't want to do it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, I still think it doesn't hurt to take the time. We've seen it with Aaron Rodgers. You know, we've seen it with Colin Kaepernick. We've seen it with different individuals that have sat a little bit and waited for their opportunity. And I think they're more prepared in a lot of different ways to be able to step in and do the job they need to do.
I want to get back to that with Joe Theismann in a moment. Going back to being under center, I've always been a proponent of it for a couple of reasons. Namely, when I was covering the beat daily, Kyle Shanahan was calling plays for Mike, and that was kind of still the way I see offense was what I learned from a lot of those guys that were here.
Right.
Like McVay, LaFleur, those guys. But for me specifically, you marry run and pass easier, I think, when you're under center.
Yeah.
And just talking to defensive players, they don't like under center as much because they feel like less is dictated in terms of directional runs. So if, you know, if you're, that's why pistol has become in vogue, I think, because you're not tipping, but if you're in the shotgun on the right, you're probably running left and vice versa. I mean, for you, you guys used to combat the thing that a lot of quarterbacks don't like. Like Caleb Williams last year complained when he got under center with Ben Johnson, there was that split second, half second where your back is to the defense. And now you got to whip back around and see what's changed. Cause everyone's now, you know, in the safety position, they're flipping formations or they're doing things and maybe they're confusing you. You guys, I feel like, used to just drop straight, like looking forward the whole time rather than the play action, like stretch that you see Peyton Manning and these guys do. When did that change?
I probably with Peyton a lot. I think, you know, you go back, you know, 10, 15 years longer, maybe. The thing about turning your back is there's a moment of deception where the defense doesn't know where the ball is. So even though you've turned your back, you've bought yourself a little bit more time. Plus, most of the routes that are run under from play action are designed for half the football field. They're not designed basically to scan from receiver one to receiver two to receiver three. You know where your outlets are if you need to go somewhere, but you get it out of your hands quicker. Your decisions are quicker. It also gets the defenders into a drop. And, you know, you sit and study film and you see where they're going to be. And throwing a football, JP, is all about getting the ball out of your hands and anticipating where the receiver is going to be. You anticipate the hole that they're going to be in. Now, today, you have a lot of 50-50 balls, which I'm not a big fan of. I still think throwing to open receivers is a unique thing and something that, you know, I think most quarterbacks would like. But you're still going to have these guys that just go up with 50-50 balls. Doesn't matter whether you turn your back or not. If you're taking a shot, you're taking a shot. But you have to find the safety, and it does give you enough time to be able to identify if that's where you want to go or you want to drop it down a little bit.
Who would have been? I'm trying. Most of the highlights I play in my head from you, you're throwing deep to someone who's open on a post, or, you know, it's Monk, as you said, working in the middle, and you guys have schemed him free with the number system. Like, were 50-50 balls a thing, or was there someone you would ever lob it up to and say, go get it?
Probably only on fades down around the goal line. You know, that would be the only time you put it up high enough. Maybe Art could go up and get it, possibly Charlie. But if you look at a lot of the throws that I've made, you know, the two in the Super Bowl, one to Charlie, one to Alvin, you know, they beat the defenders. You know, when you're down around the goal line, it's the receiver's job to beat the defender at the line of scrimmage and give me a place to throw the football, usually high and outside or lofted outside. But, I wasn't a big 50-50 guy. When we put in the two tight end offense, it changed everything. We made free safeties come and support run. We made strong safeties go into coverage. So we would run our, you know, Charlie series, Charlie 10, Charlie 30, Charlie 50, and then run a post in behind them. So it wasn't a question of 50-50s back then. Same thing with all in balls. When we, you know, we run our four routes, you're throwing into a hole. You're anticipating where that's going to be. You control the underneath coverage with your backs, and then you work your receiver or tight ends in behind it. But I wasn't a big fan of throwing it where somebody was covered. I mean,
when you mentioned the two tight ends, I mean, how prevalent was that? Because now 12 personnel with the two tight ends or even 13 with the three, it's kind of in vogue. We saw the Rams go crazy heavy with 13 personnel last year. Was Walsh first to do that, or when did you guys mix that in, the two tight ends?
That was Don Coryell, I believe. When Joe Gibbs was Coryell. Bill Walsh was the Kyle Shanahans and the Matt LaFleurs. That's the West Coast offense.
Yeah.
You know, Coach Walsh was the West Coast guy. And as a matter of fact, interestingly enough, he asked Joe Montana if he wanted to go to the shotgun, and Joe said no. Joe wanted to work under center. Coach Gibbs wouldn't let me work in the shotgun. As a matter of fact, it's really funny. When you got a back like John Riggins, if you go to the shotgun, you're taking away John's effectiveness. You're basically limiting the things that you can do with him. So I remember we were playing the Raiders. We finally put the shotgun in training camp in 1985. We're out playing the Raiders in the Coliseum. They're in Los Angeles. Ball gets snapped over my head on third down. I recover it. We punt. I walk to the sidelines, and Joe says, no more shotgun.
Eh.
I said, Coach, he goes, eh. He always used to do that to me and tell me to shut. He goes, eh, no more shotgun. That was the end of my shotgun experience. But come to find out that Joe Bugle, God bless him, God rest him, he got in Coach Gibbs's ear. And he said, you know, we just don't look very good in the shotgun. John doesn't look very good just standing back there with nothing to do. And we had this conversation. Like, yeah. So he basically talked Coach out of the shotgun. And other than, you know, one preseason game or two preseason games, and it was one game against the Bears where I got beat up so bad we went to the gun. It was like end of 84. I mean, I just got the Cardinals pummeled me. Cowboys pummeled me. And then the Bears did pretty much the same thing in that set. But that's the only time I've ever been in the gun. It, for somebody that moves, you love it because you can always make somebody miss and you can always identify free runners quickly. But I think from an offensive concept, to be under center, you have so many more ways to disguise the things you want to do, both running and throwing the football. And it gives you, I think, a distinct advantage.
Joe Theismann, former MVP, of course, led the league in yards per attempt in many categories in a 14-win season where he won that award, a Super Bowl champion. I want to talk about your career, even after football, and all the things that you did in the game as we continue on Take the Man.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer.
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait. There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.